Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Lending Leadership, The Mortgage Pros. I'm Tom Mills. I'm here with my co-host, Robert Filial, Dave Holland. How we doing today, fellas?
Good. How you doing?
Good, boss.
Awesome. Excited. That was a little better. We're going to switch it up a little bit. I know we come in, we talk like our topic like a couple minutes before. So today, you know, we've been growing. Thank you to our loyal listeners. And we love the engagement. We've actually had some questions come our way through our site. And we thought, we didn't even realize they were there until this week. And we thought, wow, we should start to take these questions on and knock them out. So I've read through a couple of them. I don't even know what's coming our way here. I know they were going to throw them at us randomly. So let's have a little fun, knock some questions down. And hopefully you listeners out there that ask the questions are here to get your answers.
And as we progress, we love these questions, guys. So keep them coming. If you're out there listening and you're running into things and want to know what the mortgage pros, how we would tackle it, get those questions in and we'll get them answered. So,
yeah. So I just see we got hit with the first one. I'll read it. John asks, feel like my manager's cherry picking and choosing the good leads for themselves, passing leftovers to me. How do I handle this without causing issues, drama?
Go get your own leads.
Dave, did you just raise your hand?
And then leave.
did you just raise your hand?
I just raised my hand. Yes.
Okay.
It's like a Teams meeting. Yeah. I mean, certainly address it head on if you think that's happening. Your manager shouldn't be cherry picking the best leads, but you know, go get your own leads, get your own referral sources. Don't depend on your manager for the leads. That's my two cents. And then leave. Develop your own business.
I agree completely. You give a man a fish, he eats for a day. You teach a man to fish, he eats for life, right? And this is kind of similar. Go get your own business and don't be relying on anyone else. If you're in a shop that is built to where you're fed leads and you feel like you're just getting cherry picked, I think all three of us would agree from a leadership perspective, the only way to handle that is direct, right? You don't have to do it to where it creates drama, you know, professional, direct conversation with the person to let them know how you feel and what you would like to see change and what that result would be. One-on-one is a great way to address anything. Where the drama comes in, I think, in a situation like this is if you let your frustrations boil over and then you become not the best employee you could be, or you have side conversations with other people in the office that detract from your manager and their potential leadership. That's really where the drama would come in as I see it.
I also think, I mean, obviously we run a different model. So of course, Dave, your answer is like generate your own leads. And I get that. And there's other models out there and I've had success in both ends and did a lead gen model before and had great success with it. I would hear that, you know, whether it was me taking the leads or not, or somebody else got the good leads, you know, and you know, the reality of it is a lead is a name, a valid name and a valid phone number of someone who may be interested in buying, selling or refinancing a home. That is a lead, you know, when we're salespeople. So I've always found that statement to be funny anyway. In most cases, you know, they think that because that other person just is working leads three times or four times as hard. And it looks like they got the good leads. They got the same name, phone numbers, and you know, valid contact information of somebody that may be interested in doing a transaction that the next person got. So, in that sense, you know, I think you've got to look at, you know, what I don't know how you define what a good lead is, what a bad lead is, but I define it more simple than that.
I think we all know what the good leads are. They're the Glengarry leads.
I was just going to reference Glengarry. Dang it. Coffee's for closers.
The Glengarry deal.
Going there. Dang it. Jumped in front of me. Yeah, I think that's all well said. Next question that just came in. I'm trying to win deals, but my manager won't approve pricing exceptions, and I'm losing clients to competitors. What do I do?
I mean, this is a tough one. Because there's a lot of variance now in the rates. Like, you know, we have some portfolio products, but generally we're an agency shop. So Fannie, Freddie, VA, FHA, USDA. So sometimes you get these credit unions in these small, you know, small banks or SNLs or mutual companies that they just want to fill up their their pipeline of loans. They have some money to lend, and then they disappear. They're in for a quarter or for 6 months, and they're out for 2 years. I mean, we've seen guys, rates that are a full percent lower than ours. I mean, it doesn't happen often, but it happens from time to time. You know, if it's close, yeah. I mean, your manager should approve those exceptions. But if it's a massive difference, you know, you can end up losing money on those, right? And if you're constantly coming in the well, you know, you got to look at where your referral sources are and your customers are. If every single transaction needs a pricing exception, that's an issue. That's an issue. And Robert, I know you're going to say, and I mean, you know, how do some of these credit union and bank people get paid? It's a lot different from a shop like ours.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a really good place to start, right? Comparison's the thief of all joy. But when you're looking at pricing, you really have to look at who am I up against, and is it an apples to apples comparison? And, you know, it's easy to forget this in the moment when you're just trying to win a deal, and we want every deal that we can get. But not all models are built equal. And that guy, that credit union that has walk-in foot traffic that's making a $40,000 a year salary and 10 basis points, yeah, doesn't have the ability to make the same kind of money that you have to make. But that ability to make that money is because of where your pricing is. And that's what pays for that. And it pays for the support that you get so you don't have to be in your files, and the marketing that you get to grow your business, and whatever other aspects of it are, right? So I think Dave, your point's extremely valid, especially when we see volatile markets and when we see people, you know, starving, right, for volume. They'll undercut. It's been a knife the last 2 years, guys. It's been a knife fight to the bottom, like just who can get to the bottom quickest. And yeah, we've really cannibalized and commoditized ourselves, which is sad. But you do have to take apples to apples and make sure that you're comparing that deal you're up against and the model that it is and how it is into the conversation, and have some self-reflection there. And before you guys come to tar and feather me, I know that that's difficult when you're just trying to win deals, but that's really the foundation of it.
Yeah. You know, we've been in an environment, I think rates mattered more in the last 2 years and probably the rest of my career combined, you know? So, I think everybody's a little sensitive to it as business got more scarce. You know, everybody took on a different strategy. And, you know, I think when you say comparison, I mean, when you compare, you know, when you say my competition, that's also changed. You know, our competition is sometimes a local bank, the credit union today. So, you know, we should really understand your competition and really understand, you know, the differences, because it's not just the compensation. It's not just the rate. It's the compensation, the structure, the support, the marketing dollars, the, you know, what do you get to focus on, all that kind of stuff. And all that really, really matters, I think. And I also think you're going to lose some loans to rate. And if you don't lose some loans, you're probably priced too well, and you'll probably feel some effects of that, you know, that the negative effects of having too strong of price. So if you really look at who your true competition is and you feel like you're losing out to who you should define as your true competition, which is somebody, a company that offers similar type of compensation structure, support structure, marketing opportunities and tools and things like that, and you feel like you're losing to that competition, you know, you might want to start to explore, you know, quite honestly. And I'm not always saying that the answer is to leave, but, you know, if you don't feel like you've got a supportive manager and you got like companies out there that are beating you, you know, rate is important today. I'll say that.
Yeah, I agree. I think anyone that says rate's not important is lost in the sauce. It's not the only important thing, and it may not even be the most important thing, but it's certainly a factor and is important.
It is the 2 or 3 out of 10 of every customers you're going to come across. That's what I'll tell you. That's why it's important, because for 2 to 3 out of 10, that's about the number, right? It's everything to them.
It's everything. Dave, you get to read this next question.
Oh boy, this actually,
we have some experience with this.
We have some recent experience in 2025. My borrower says they make a living from OnlyFans.com. I don't even know what that is or how to document it. What do I do? Send it over this way, because we've done two the past 3 months. So OnlyFans is it's not all pornography, right?
I was just going to say it's a content creation site and just leave it
content
there.
Content creation. Okay, perfect. Content creation site.
1099 content creators. Yeah, so they're self-employed.
They're self-employed. So, you know, we got to look at a two-year history. I think our specific situation was there was a massive spike in the income. Massive spike.
Like from 100 grand 1 year to 1.2 million the next year.
Yeah, we got it done. We got them in the home.
Did we document the number of viewers that increased from year to year?
I'm not gonna give the recipe up, Tom, but
we don't know all the details. We don't know what city it was in. It was somewhere in the central or eastern time zone. All right. So yeah, let's move off this one. What do we have next?
But the short answer is self-employed income. Just document it like you would self-employed income.
I think our situation was a little more complicated, but we don't want to dive too deep.
It was. There was some tax issue. Her accountant messed some stuff up. Accountant, can we stop for a second and talk about the number of incorrect tax returns we see and the crazy stuff that accountants do? I guess maybe they have a reason on their side of the world, but on the mortgage side, it's like, I just scratch my head. I'm like, what are we doing here? Why do we do this?
That's that accountant that can get you more money back than anybody else. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. They make us the bad guy. Your mortgage company doesn't know what you're talking about. I mean, I don't know. I run these items by my accountant often, and he just scratches his head.
All right. You got another question? All right.
Yeah, here we go. I got one. You got it, Millsy?
Yeah, I'll read it. I signed a contract with a new mortgage company, and now I'm realizing there's a really strict non-compete. Am I stuck?
That's a great question. So first off, you should always read your contract before you sign it, and never, ever, never, ever, never, ever, ever, never sign a contract with a non-compete.
Yes.
First off, I want to answer that for Chris. So Chris, non-compete, non-solicit, two completely different things. You know, non-solicit means, you know, you can't go to that company and solicit their employees or their customers or potentially even the customers that you originated during that time, depending on how that agreement's written. That a non-compete generally means if you leave that organization, usually some mile radius, you can't compete and actively originate loans within a certain mile radius of where they may do business. That is something you shouldn't sign. There's definitely a few companies out there that have it, and I've definitely have answered that question many a times, and those companies are usually pretty litigious as well. So good luck with that. The quick answer is to not sign the agreement, but non-compete, you know, understand it. I think any originator should always understand their agreement. If they're ever thinking about leaving, you should understand everything about that agreement, what leaving looks like, you know, and weigh your decision there. You may have a time period there, that you're past that period, and it may be worth waiting for that, depending on how that's written. I've seen some strict ones and seen some people have some a real hard time moving on.
A lot of lawsuits over it too. A lot of dollars, time, energy, anguish.
It's the ugliest part of the business. I hate horrible. That it became that.
It really comes off subject, a little bit of a tangent, but it really comes down to companies just being insecure in the value that they provide and their ability to retain their producers. So they try to put these handcuffs on them, right? Like there are some instances, if you're paying big money up front, where you maybe have a clawback on it, or you know, maybe some non-solicit if you're providing some leads and that kind of stuff,
but brought you out of college, taught you the, you know, yeah. I can see certain senses our industry and others where it makes some sense, but you know, a non-compete, especially for somebody that has an existing book of business, to go to a company that they now have a non-compete, if they were to want to leave that company, like that's craziness to me. You know, if that company helped you establish that book of business, you know, that's a little different.
Chris, if you did sign it and you're realizing it, the first question I would have is, have you fully onboarded? If you have not onboarded, I would walk it back and not move your NMLS and not start, right? If you have fully onboarded and you signed it, now you're realizing it. I mean, as much as I hate to say this phrase, you need to consult an employment attorney in your state. Laws vary state to state. There's some places where it may not even be enforceable, right? So if you're in that situation, are you stuck? I don't know. I'm not an employment attorney. I don't know what state you're in. You need to consult an employment attorney in your state.
Rob, you want to grab the next one?
Yeah. My barber's basically admitted to fraud, but I really need the commission.
Well, what type of fraud was it, Robert? Was it soft fraud or hard fraud?
Does it matter, Dave? And what do you mean by soft fraud or hard fraud? Like,
fraud is fraud.
Fraud is fraud.
And man. And by the way, you'd be committing it as well.
I know you're joking, but let's clarify for everyone out there that you're joking.
I am joking, of course.
No, yeah, I think our question asker was clearly joking with that.
Maybe not. So listen, I mean, fraud is fraud. You can lose your license, obviously. Your company could self-report you. The borrower could get in trouble, depending on what happened. The realtor could get in trouble. Just, it's a slippery slope. You know, once you step over that line, you'll step over the line again.
Yeah, and, you know, the question that you've always got to ask yourself, you may need that commission, but is that commission worth your entire livelihood? Because you could end up in prison. You could end up out of this business. It's not worth it.
You know, or at the very least, your license could be suspended for a period of time. And if you sit on this business for the sideline for a couple of years and you get on, you know, Fannie, Freddie, FHA's list, you're done.
You're done.
I know a couple of people that ruined their careers over some really bad decisions. And it's a beautiful business that we're in, a beautiful industry. We can out-earn most industries that have to go for 12 years of school to earn our money, and we can do it all the right way, and I encourage you to do that.
Oh, next question. Do I really need to be on TikTok as a loan officer? It feels ridiculous.
No, you don't need to be on any social media. I mean, I think anyone with social media, you have to find what works for you and what your audience is. But yeah, I don't. TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, they're all very useful tools to increase your business, your exposure to referral partners, customers, but no, you don't need to be on it.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I know some people that have, you know, have a large TikTok following and have had posts go viral and the, you know, the millions of views and got the hundreds of leads, and, you know, in hindsight, seeing what happened with them, I think the instance that I know well, I think they closed two loans out of it, right? Hmm. The amount of work and follow-up and, you know, everything that went with that it took to close those two loans, I would have rather just spent a few more weeks dialing for coffee appointments.
I look at it a little different. I think that, you know, you've got to, it depends on who your audience is, meaning who is your client that you're going after. And if that's where your client's spending time, then you're missing an opportunity to market to them in that time. You know, like kind of where, you know, our realtors aren't hanging out in the office anymore. They're hanging out on social media, whether it be TikTok or Facebook or Instagram or something. So people do business with people that they know, like, and trust. And, you know, if you can, you know, grow that network of people that know you, like you, and funnel them to trusting you. If that customer you want to work with, that type of realtor you want to work with, the type of customer, demographic of customer you want to work with is there on TikTok, you know, you might want to consider a strategy. I don't think you need to, because that's a beautiful thing about this business. There's no one way to do this. You could, I know people that write 100 million that don't even have social media accounts. And I know people that spend their day on social media and don't write a goddamn loan a month. So it, you know, you can be who you want to be and go after, you know, where you want to go after your business, but that's certainly a way of marketing. And I think that's how, you know, mentioned like lead capturing on social media, that's different than the ability to market, stay top of mind, show you're a subject matter expert on something, show you have value, share success stories. I think there's a lot there.
I agree that if you choose to do it, it can be, you know, a lot. I think we're all in the same thing that you don't have to do it or you don't need to do it. What I think we would also all agree, whatever you decide, and this is with any marketing that you're going to do, whatever you're going to do, it needs to be intentional. You need to have a plan and you have to be consistent with it. If you're just getting on TikTok and, you know, happenstance here and there, and you think you're going to build a following and it's going to change your business, you're 100% wrong.
And I think that's why it's being asked. You know, I think a lot of people are trying to find their way, and it's like, oh, you know, let me go on social media. And I tell you, no doubt about it, I see more people wasting their time on social media than doing productive stuff. But
guys, there's no magic button.
Yeah.
Well, there is a magic button. Wake up every day, grind hard, work 12 hours until you make it. Well, it's all the basic boring blocking and tackling stuff that everyone's been taught.
Yep.
So that goes to the next question. This is from Judy. I feel like I'm doing everything right, but I'm still not closing enough. How do I know if it's just me or the market? I mean, the market's not great, but there's people absolutely killing it right now.
I would argue that, Dave. I would argue that the market's not great because if we look, and I'm going to mess these numbers up a little bit, but it's either National Association of Realtors or the Mortgage Bankers Association. This is going to be like the third or fourth best purchase year in the last 20 years in terms of projected volume.
Yeah.
So like we don't have the refis that's there, but it's still like there's still a ton of business to be had out there.
I think there's some markets that are stronger than others. I mean, all of our markets, we have some inventory problems, like here in Pittsburgh we do, but other markets, I know it's like really bad. But in any market, there's someone who's absolutely killing it. There's brand new loan officers. You know, we have a woman at our company who had her leaderboard, and she's been in the retail mortgage space for what, 8 months? Yeah. So she's just out there doing all the right things day in and day out, hustling. So, you know, you got to find a good mentor. You got to find a good company, someone who can lead you and tell you what to do day in and day out, and then execute.
Well, I think that, another question that is like, you feel you're doing everything right. Well, how long have you been doing everything right? Because there's definitely no instant button to that, right? So let's say you weren't doing everything right for the last 6 years of your career and you started 90 days ago doing everything right. I think you're just getting to a point where you might start to see things turn, like, because that's 90 to 120 day mark is usually it, So what you should be focused on, proof for that is, what is your credit pulls looking like? What is your new leads looking like? How many apps you disclosing? Locking loans. You said your fundings aren't enough. They're going to trail behind all of that. So, really measure on the activity that you're seeing from doing these right things. If you're not seeing activity, you might want to start to ask yourself, like, whose definition of are you doing the right things by? There might be a different approach you want to take, because there is opportunity out there. We are not in a bad, not a horrible market by any means. And usually I think what I see most people that are truly doing the right things consistently right now are having a pretty good run.
Yeah. I love what you said there, Tom. And I agree. You got to know your numbers. You got what you don't measure, you can't improve, right? So you got to know your numbers and know that the fundings are going to trail. You got to know your metrics. And it's so, apropos what you say, it is a 90 to 120 day run rate, right? So if you see, there's one of two levers to push in this place, right? It's either, are you not getting the leads? And your numbers will tell you that. That's a different conversation. Or are you getting the leads and then you're not getting the conversion? Because that's a different thing to focus on. And if you know your numbers, you can dial it down to, do I not have the opportunities or am I not converting the opportunities? And then adjust your sales from there. I have a great one on this one.
So do I. So I'm going to steal it from you. Go ahead.
I'm going to just go right into it as I read the question. I'm not going to give you the chance. So I absolutely hate cold calling. Are there any other ways to prospect that don't feel so cringy? Absolutely.
That's great. That's a great question.
Open houses. Go visit open houses. They're happening all the time in most markets. It's a good opportunity. Most of the time, the agents kind of hanging out. They want some company. You get to meet other agents as they come through. You get to potentially meet some clients. This will help you start to build a network. It's a warm introduction. Take that and pair it off into one-on-one coffees to get deeper, and you can make a lot of connections without having a cold call, and it works really well. There's a lender friend of mine who came into the business, and literally he's a Scotsman's Guide winner, built a branch, and literally when he came in, this is how he did it. All he did was hit open houses nonstop to build relationships and take it from there. Was that it, Dave? Did I steal it?
You actually stole it. Yeah. So, but when you do open houses, cause I did them starting off on my career, right? It warms you up, right? Cause you usually have a realtor who can be bored at the open house, going with the plan. If they're talking to, a potential home buyer or someone, like, just don't jump in and cut them off, right? Like, do it naturally, have a plan, you know, have a conversation ready. And then I've seen loan officers bring like realtor open house survival kits, you know, doesn't be something big, like, you know, bottled water, you know, aspirin, you know, something like that, you know, and just hit as many open houses as you can. And a lot of markets, there's twilight open houses during the week, and there's open houses on Saturday and Sunday. So you can cover a lot of ground. If I was a realtor and I had a mortgage loan officer hustling on open houses, I'd be like, hey, this person's a worker. They're a grinder. I want this person on my side. Certainly want to give them all my business out of the gate, but I might throw them a bone. Yeah. It's definitely, I didn't make my career on that, but I certainly, that helped. And I used, back in the day, Robert, you might've done it, Tom, too, pass out rate sheets at realtor's office. I used to do that every Wednesday, every single Wednesday. Most of that stuff went right in the chat trash. I knew it, but I did make some connections.
Yeah. The only thing I'd add is get used to calling. Nobody likes cold calling, and it's actually, you know, really low converting, to be quite honestly. Like, straight cold calls are low converting calls. So look for opportunities to warm those calls up, make connection prior, you know, leverage other people to, you know, to connections, name drop people, you know, find any way you can to, you know, get the target list you want and look to warm that list up if you're not comfortable with the just straight cold call approach.
I'm going to add one more since Dave and I kind of overlapped, and I want to give the people a full three-pronged approach. Find a way to add value by becoming a subject matter expert on a niche product, right? Whatever that may be in your market or your company, you know, we have an awesome renovation department here. Like, it's going to open the door to where you're bringing value to the agent that you're calling on. To help them close business that maybe they didn't know that they could close or that they'd be able to close. And that's going to get you connections. You're not cold calling at that point. You're calling to tell them about something that you're the subject matter expert in and frankly, probably don't have a lot of competition in. It's a great way to build relationships.
Don't put them on a pedestal. You're the prize.
This next question's a good one for you, Dave, to read.
How do I
last question, by the way, sorry to cut you off. Last question.
No, you're good. How do I politely ask a borrower to stop texting me at 10 p.m. on weekends? You can do a couple different things. Ask them, just tell them you shut down at 8 or 9, put your phone on do not disturb, don't reply, or just go to sleep. I don't know. I mean, boundaries, we always say boundaries are sexy. I lost a realtor partner one time because she texted me at 11:15, 11:20 on a Sunday night. And she said, how come you didn't pick up? And I said, I was sleeping. She goes, well, I need my lending partner on till midnight most nights. I said, I'm not your guy then. And that might have been one of the last times I spoke with her. But, you know, I had someone text me at 11:30 on Sunday, borrower, and I just got back to him the next day. I mean, I got back to him at 5:15 a.m. when I woke up immediately because I wanted to respond to it. But, yeah, someone texts me that late at night, as soon as I get up, first thing I do is I text them a couple times. So they had a couple buzzes. You know,
that's the point in our life that we're at.
Yeah, when it's after 11 o'clock, like, come on. I mean, nothing's gonna get solved that late at night. So I put my do not disturb on most nights.
Listen, I love this question. And I don't remember if we've done a segment on this yet or not. If not, we should. Boundaries are sexy. And it's up to you as the originator to set them. And what keeps people from setting them is the scarcity mentality. And you got to kick that to the curb and put your boundaries in place and stick to them, right? If not, people will take as much as you let them take. I'm a firm believer in that. Set your boundaries. I would tell my clients up front, these are our working hours. If you contact me within these hours, you will get a response back before the end of the day. If you don't, you know, if it's after these hours, you're going to get a response the next day. Set the expectation up front and then stick to it, because the minute you deviate from it, you have now just rewarded their behavior and have shown that if they do that, you're going to reply, right? So you got to set the boundaries. You got to stick to it. And you got to be okay with, you know, you may lose a deal. You may lose an agent partner. When Dave talked about the one he lost, when I started setting my team up and set the team phone and team email up, I had an agent say, if I can't talk to you and only you all the time, I'm not going to send business anymore. I said, I'm sorry you feel that way. It sounds like we won't be working together anymore. Never sent me another deal. you know what? I think I added 27 agents that year that started sending us business. So it's okay.
I like this format.
We took a lot of questions in. We took a lot of questions. I still say there's a whole bunch more. We should probably do this again.
Yeah, this was great. I enjoyed it.
All right, guys.
Good stuff. Hey, thanks for tuning in, guys, to this exciting episode of Lending Leadership with the Mortgage Pros. Don't forget to hit that like button. Leave us that 5-star review. Tune in every week for us and send your questions in. We want to hear from you. We'd love to get some answers out to you. Let us know what you're up against and what we can solve for you. For Dave Holland and Tom Mills, I'm Robert Filioff. Y'all have a great day.